Okay, so tonight we begin Masechet Sanhedrin. The parak of Sanhedrin that we are going to be studying is the third parak, parak Zeborer, which, as we'll see, is named after the first sugya that we'll be studying. And it pertains to many Basin issues, structure of Basin issues. I don't know if you got the second page of these sources.
Yeah, I got the second page. Yeah, I have the second page.
I was hoping it would just be... You only have the second page.
Both.
Okay, great. These are double-sided, but that's okay. It begins by dealing with certain structural Basin issues, and then goes on to discuss primarily issues pertaining to Eidos. Various psulim of Eidos, people who are disqualified from testifying. There's a mission that talks about all of the relatives that are included, that aren't allowed to testify. But at the very beginning, it begins with some structure of Basin issues. Now, to really do the third parak properly, you have an extensive introduction to the topic through the first parak. The first parak and the third parak are closely related in certain ways. Sanhedrin is actually a mesechta that's organized very nicely thematically. In certain mesechtos, within three daf, you're in five different, totally different areas of halacha. You learn Maseches Ksubos. We were learning Ksubos, but we started on daf tes. If you start on daf beis and you go through daf Zion, you're in all different starim, Shisha Sedrei Mishnah. That's why Ksubos is called Shas Katan. Sanhedrin happens to be organized into nice segments very well. So the beginning of the Masechta relates to many Basin issues, and the first parak and the third parak are particularly important for those matters. But we're going to delve directly into the third parak, and particularly into the question of Basin Shel Zavla, Zebor Lo Echad, which we'll explore tonight. So I think for tonight, the plan will be to read the Mishnah and the Gemara together, or at least the first relevant Mishnah and the Gemara together. We will analyze the Mishnah and the Gemara as we go along. We'll do this especially because it's, you know, just us. We'll do it more organically. In other words, instead of just presenting the issues, we will read through the Mishnah and Gemara together as we would were we just learning the sugya together. And in the meantime, I will point out certain important Rishonim, certain important Rashis and Tosfasin, and some other Maran Makomos, depending on how far we get this evening. So let's just take it from the top. The Mishnah begins with Dine Mamonos Bishlosha. So that refers to three Dayanim. You need three judges to judge matters of Mamonos, of monetary disputes between two people. And that's actually something that we know from the first parak. The first Mishnah in Masechet Sanhedrin lists how many people you need for all sorts of different things. And one of the things that Mishnah says is that for Dine Mamonos, you only need three people. Then the Mishnah goes on to give us the structure of how you decide on those three people. Zebor lo echad, the zebor lo echad, ushnehen borin lohen od echad, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says this is the way you choose a basin. We'll see whether this is the actual procedure or it's only limited to specific circumstances. But Rabbi Meir says, let's say Reuven and Shimon have a dispute, right? So Reuven picks his judge, Shimon picks his judge, and then the two of them get together and they select a third. That's Rabbi Meir's position. V'chachamim omrim, shnei dayonin borerin lohen od echad. Who appoints the third? So Reuven appoints one, Shimon appoints a second. Those two judges that were appointed by Reuven and Shimon go and pick the third. So that's what's called, that's why this parak is called Zeb Borer, Zeb Borer Lo Echad. And it's also good to know, very often it's referred to as Zavla, Zeb Borer Lo Echad. That's why on the sources you'll see Be'inyan based in Shel Zavla. These are just the first sources. Obviously, we're going to have, once the sources are completed, we'll have a much more extensive packet on it. But based on Shel Zavla. Now, okay? Again, because we're doing this organically, whenever you encounter a machlokes in a Mishnah or in a Gemara, you want to know what's going on, right? It seems almost arbitrary, right? Rabbi Meir says, the Bali Dinim choose, the Chacham say the Dayanim. What is it contingent on? I'm asking you. Any thoughts? So we'll have to assess that. Okay, what exactly is this machlokas contingent upon? It gets more interesting. The Mishnah presents two more disputes between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham. Okay. So after Shnei Dayan Boran Lohod Echad, next, now we're on the fourth line, last word. Dayano Shel Zeh Vizeh. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's what we said. Now, fourth line. three words from the end of the line. Zeh posel dayano shel zeh. Zeh posel dayano shel zeh. Devrei Rabbi Meir. Each one can reject the other person's dayan. So it's true that Shimon is choosing a dayan, but Reuven can decide, you know what, I don't really like the guy that you chose, and he has veto power. B'chachamim omrim, emasai, bizman shemevi alayhan raya shehin krovin opsulin. When is he allowed to reject the other person's judge? Specifically when he brings proof that the other person's judge is pasul, is disqualified for whatever reason. He's a Rasha, he's a Karov, right? Krovin opsulin. Okay, so again, second dispute between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says each one can reject the other person's chosen dayan. Each one has veto power on the other's choice. The Chachamim say, no, that's not really true. You have to bring proof that there's grounds for disqualification. Okay? And again, just finishing the Chachamim, avalam hayuk sherin ha-mumcheh mipi beisin in yachal l'posla. The Chachamim say, if the guy's a mumcheh, if he's kosher, you can't disqualify him. Final machlokas, number three. Zeh posel edov shazeh, v'zeh posel edov shalzeh. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, not only can you get rid of the other person's judge, you can disqualify his witnesses. You can disqualify another guy's witnesses, just say,
arbitrary.
So, obviously, that's not, you can't just get rid of another person's witnesses, and as we'll see as we go through this parak, the Gemara presents four different possibilities as to what exactly Rabbi Meir is saying within this last machlokas. Again, the Chachamim say, when can you disqualify your adversary's witnesses when they are Kroven Opsulin, the other litigant. If they're good Edim, you can't just get rid of the other person's witnesses. That's obviously a highly intuitive position. And again, we'll have to see what Rabbi Meir holds. So three disputes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Number one, who appoints the third judge? Is it Reuven and Shimon getting together and appointing the third judge? Or is it their chosen judges who appoint the third judge? Again, that's seemingly... Okay, who really cares so much? Is it really so different? We'll see that perhaps the answer is yes. Number two, can I just disqualify the other person's judge? Or can I not? Now again, the intuitive position would be what? No, you can't. Just disqualify the other person's position, the other person's judge. So the Chachamim would seem to make a lot of sense, but Rabbi Meir holds you could just disqualify the other person's judge. And then there's the witnesses machlokas, that's the third one. That one I want to leave aside for the moment, because as I said, as we're going to see, there's a big dispute about what exactly that's referring to. But we have these two machlokos, leaving aside the third one, about the nature of Beis Din Shel Zevul. So now we have, again, a couple of questions. The first question is, what exactly are they arguing about? We know it's not going to be an arbitrary machlokas, or at least we assume, right? It's hardly going to be an arbitrary dispute about, what's the most effective way, and he happens to think this or happens to think that. Presumably there's something at the core of this. There's something driving this dispute. And that's true in each of these two disputes. Okay, so that the first thing for us to determine is what is going on in each of these machlokos. Now, whenever you have two machlokos in a Mishnah, what else do we need to ask? We also want to ask,
Are they related?
Do they just happen to be lumped in the same Mishnah? Which happens sometimes. Sometimes you have Mishnayos that group a whole host of different issues. But perhaps when we understand the conceptual underpinnings of either machlokas, we'll have perhaps understand why they might be related. And obviously I'm going to argue that they are related. Any thoughts on why for the moment? Or the judges? Again, Rabbi Meir says that the two Baalei Dinim themselves need to appoint a third judge. He also says that they can disqualify the other person's judge. Any theme within Rabbi Meir? Any thoughts?
There's more power in the...
Very good, right?
Litigants.
Good. Rabbi Meir is giving the Baalei Dinim, right, or the litigants, more power, more control over the case. They are the ones who choose the third Dayan. They are the ones who are able to disqualify. They have the power to disqualify or veto power over the other person's appointment. So we notice right away that Rabbi Meir seems to be giving more power, more koach, to the litigants themselves. We'll have to assess why he's doing so, as opposed to the Chachamim. But even just looking at the Machlokos, we can see, yeah, there does seem to be a common denominator between those two issues, even between all three, whereby Rabbi Meir is investing significant power in the Baalei Dinim. Fine. Then we come to the Gemara. Now the Gemara actually I already gave you the conclusion of the Gemara. Look at what the Mishnah says. Let's go back to that first line. It's a very ambiguous line. This one appoints one, this one appoints one. And the Gemara doesn't really know what exactly that means. Okay? What does it mean, this one appoints one and this one appoints one? And the Gemara goes through three options. We're going to talk about what those three options are. The Gemara starts. Let's take a look at the Gemara. My zebor lo echad, zebor lo echad. Bitlasa sagi. What does it mean, this one appoints one and this one appoints one? Three should be sufficient. Let's take a look at Rashi. First Rashi on the page. Zebor lo echad. Mashma, what does this imply? Zebor lo beistin echad, shehin gimel. This one appoints a beistin. Beze echad, and this one appoints another one, hare shisha. Now you have six dayanim. Ushnehen borin lahen od echad hare tisha. And now they pick a third based in, you have nine. Behind you to come a tama, maize bor lo echad habitlas asagi. That's why you're asking, why do you need nine? Three should suffice. Rashi understands this first line in the Gemara as suggesting that you would need nine judges to adjudicate in this case of zebor lo echad. That's the way Rashi learns it. Take a look at Tosfos. Again, first Tosfos, okay? Now, on the sheets I sent, there were like highlights, and they didn't come out in the print, but we'll just, I highlighted certain keywords. I'll make sure to correct that for next time. But let's read through the whole Tosfos. Maizabar loachab zebar loachab. Pei hei in Tosfos is always Pir Shakuntris. Rashi tells us, Dimashmo delehavu teisha, or tes, that there should be nine judges. Ketzad, how does this occur? Zebor lo basin echad, hare gimel. One has three, right? First basin is three. Zebor lo basin echad, hare shisha. Second basin is six. Ushnehem born lam basin echad, hare tisha. So they both choose the third basin, you have nine judges. Ulhaki matama betlas asagi. And therefore the Gemara asks, why do you have nine, you have three? Says those of the Lonahira. This doesn't make sense. Shahare mashma'os halashon enuki. Because the language of the Mishnah doesn't really imply this way. Why? It tells us to make a very obvious diuk. The imkain, havale lahakshos behedya, I'm sorry, the imkain, havale lahakshos behedya hagupa kasha, reisha asefa. Because the Gemara should have asked, you have a contradiction between the first line of the Mishnah and the second. What are the first three words of the Mishnah? Dine mamanos b'shlosha. So, you're telling me that the havamina of the Gemara is that there were nine. And it asks Habitlas Asagi, it should say, what do you mean? The first line in the Mishnah says Dine Mamanos Bishlosha. Amrit Dine Mamanos Bishlosha. You just told me that Dine Mamanos is with three. Amo Begimel Sagi, Bahadur Kamrit Tsarf Tes. Then you're telling me there's nine in the very next line? So it tells us reject Rashi. And as we'll see as we go along, I don't want to go through everything now. There are actually three different ways of learning this one first line in the Gemara. But the one thing I want to note is Rashi's, for now, I don't want to go through all the others' positions, I want to note Rashi's position, and Rashi's position is widely attacked by all the other Rishonim. Tosfos asks the first kasha, what do you mean? It says, the Mishnah says, Dine Momenos Peshlosha, how can you tell me that in the very next line, it's nine? And the Rishonim ask a whole host of different kashas on Rashi. Rashi's position is actually quite problematic, it's attacked, but I want to highlight one other way the Rishonim ask this kasha, and that's source 5 on these source sheets. Tosfos HaRosh asks the question a little bit differently. Source 5, Zebor lo echad.
So if you learn it this way, then you have to learn the next part also the same way.
Namely
that you say, now you're saying so you have
when you post it.
When you postal the whole
Beis Din. Yeah. What you're saying? The next line.
Yeah. Zeh postal dino shel dayon shel zeh. Zeh postal dayon shel zeh. Devar Rameya.
Rabbi Binyamin is giving a shiur upstairs.
Oh, okay. So how are they getting?
The door. He opened the door.
Oh, got it. Okay. So I'm sorry, Nathan. What exactly is the question?
When you come to the second part
of the Gemara?
In the Mishnah.
Yeah.
So what are you saying? You're saying in the second part that they can, each one can puzzle
Yeah, what Rashi would say is as follows. We need 9 judges, right?
Right.
So you're choosing 3 and I'm choosing 3.
Right.
But I have the right to reject your 3.
Right.
And you have the right to reject my 3.
Right.
That's what the second line in the Mishnah would be saying.
So if you... But if you... So how do you interpret the fact that the Dayanim choose a third?
So your based in and my based in would get together and choose a third based in, exactly. Okay? Take a look at the Tozar Rosh. The Tozar Rosh asks what's perhaps an even more basic question than Tosos. Zebor lo echad, Pirush Rashi based in echad, Shehem Gimel, Ushnehem borim lahem od based in echad, Hare Tisha, there are 9. Now underline v'kasha, but mata hatama lefarsha mishnah deveinan teisha. That's all the Tosfos Rashi says. Now it could mean that it could be that he's saying the same thing as Tosfos. That the first line says dinei mamonos b'shloshim. But I think he might be asking something more, which is, why in the world would you need 9 dayanim? Why in the world would you need 9? It's just. What's the svara behind that? Why would we think that you need 9? Now, obviously, again, it is similar to Tosfos, but he doesn't focus on the textual point. In other words, once we know that you need 3 for dinei mamonos, why would the Gemara ever have a hava amina that all of a sudden you need 9 for dinei mamonos? So that's something that we're going to have to consider. For Rashi, why... Is this just a throwaway line in the Gemara that, oh, maybe that's what the Gemara didn't really think that. It was just throwing out a possibility. Or might there be something more to the suggestion that we would require 9 in this based in Shal Zevlo, this mysterious based in of Zebor Lo Echad? Is there a reason to think that you might need more? Okay? But in any event, the Gemara rejects that possibility. Whether you learn it like Rashi or like Tosfos or the Tosfos Arash, the Gemara rejects that possibility. And suggests something else. B'tlasa sagi. So the Gemara next suggests hachi ka'ama. This is what it means to say. Now we're on the third line in the Gemara, right? Kishazeh, first word in the line. Kishazeh, borelo based in echad. What key word is he? What's the key letter here? K. Kishazeh. When I appoint one based in, b'zeh borelo based in echad, and you appoint another based in, shnehen borin lohem od echad. What does that mean?
Seven.
I choose one. You say, no way, I'm not going to that based in. You choose another based in. I say, no way, I'm not going to your based in. Okay? Then the two of them together have to choose a third based in. Okay? So option number one, they would need 9 judges. Option number two, each of us choose a based in. Neither of us like the other one's choice. So we have to together choose a based in. Okay? Now the Gemara asks a kasha on this, and we're going to do a section of the Gemara now, which isn't going to be immediately relevant to our sugya, but is critically important for the next sugya that we're going to do. Va'afilu lo ve'matzi ma'akev, the Gemara asks. There's a general rule that when there is a malveh and a malveh is a lender, a loveh is a borrower, only the malveh has the right to choose which beisdin they go to. Why that is, we're going to see. Okay? But usually the plaintiff has the right to choose which based in they go to. The default is, well, actually, I shouldn't say what the default is, because that's a big question. We'll talk about that when we do the sugya. But usually only the malveh is allowed to choose. So the Gemara asks, you're telling me that this whole Mishnah is saying what? That I get rid of yours, you get rid of mine. But that implies that each party has the power to disqualify the other person's based in. We don't usually say that. We usually say that only the malveh has the ability to do that. The Gemara continues. V'ha'amar Rabbi Elazar. Didn't Rabbi Elazar say, in the Gemara in Daf Lamed Aleph, which again, Be'ezus Hashem, we will see, Lo shanu ela malveh, ava loveh kopen oso v'dan b'yira. The malveh has the right to choose where to go, but if the loveh says, no, you know what, I don't like the local basin, I want to go somewhere else, Rabbi Elazar says, what do? You force him to go to the local basin. So the Gemara answers, K'da'amar Rabbi Yochanan ba'akar shebesur yashanu, hachanami, Be'arkoja Besur Yashanu. So again, this is a little bit of a complicated Gemara, but we'll just go through it for the sake of going through the Gemara now. We'll flesh it out more when we do our next sugya. Rabbi Yochanan says, the Loveh is allowed to be Ma'akev in cases of Arkoja Besur. What are these Arkoja Besur? a little bit ambiguous, some form of inferior Beis Din. They don't know what they should. They're not properly qualified. Do they not know anything at all? Do they know a little bit? So that's, there are different positions within the Rishonim as to how much or how little, better yet, they know. But the Lova is a little, look, the Malva says, stay here. The Lova says, I want to go somewhere else. Generally, we tell the Lova, you have to stay put. If the local Beis Din really is this inferior, low-quality Beis Din, we'll let the Lova have his way, and we'll let him go somewhere else. So why is it that each party is able to disqualify? Because we're dealing with this inferior, lower-quality Beis Din. Or the Gemara says as follows. This is going to be, for our next sugya, this is going to be the key line. Aval mumchen lo, right? We have the first one on the line is mumchen.
Yeah.
Aval mumchen lo, you can't disqualify mumchen. Rav Papa Amar, Rav Papa says, afilu tema mumchen, you can even disqualify mumchen, kegon beidina de Rav Huna de Rav Chista de ka amar lai mika matrach nalacha. This is a classic example of a Gemara where you have no idea what's going on, not for Rashi. Rashi explains that Rav Huna and Rav Chista were both experts, obviously. They had Batei Dinim, both of their Beis Dins were in the same town. Okay? So again, if Lova says, I want to go to another Beis Din, we tell him, stay here. If there are two Batei Din in town, and he says, I don't want to go to this one, I want to go to that one, and they're equal in standing, we'll let him go to the Beis Din of his choice. Okay? So when is the Lova allowed to disqualify the other person's Beis Din? Either when the Malva chooses a lousy Beis Din, then the Lova can disqualify. Or if the Beis Din, but they didn't are high quality, but they're both within the same town. But then the Gemara rejects this as well. Tanan, v'chachamim omrim shnei dayanin borurin lahed orecha. What do the Chachamim say? The Chachamim say, the people that you appointed, go and appoint the third. V'yisak adayta kitaka amrinan. If we want to accept this suggestion, if you want to take the second approach that each one's appointing a Beis Din and disqualifying, you got rid of these guys already. They're done from the case. I said, I don't accept yours. You said, you don't accept mine. Well, why are those two rejected, but they didn't, the ones who are authorized to select our final Beis Din? Now, could you have theoretically said, even though they're rejected from judging, they're still licensed to pick the third Beis Din? You could have theoretically said that. But the Gemara is assuming that once they've been rejected from the case, they are rejected from the case, period, no questions asked. And they should no longer have any license or authority to choose a third Beis Din. Fine, that's the assumption of the Gemara. Option number two is rejected. As again, we're going to revisit option number two, because option number two is very important. We're going to see that there's actually a dispute within Zeborer. This whole methodology of me picking one, you picking one, and together we pick the third, is that, do we do that every single time? Or is it only if we can't agree on one Beis Din to go to? So what happens if you say, let's go, no, you know what, I don't want to do the Zeborer. Let's go to, the Beis Din of America, and I say, let's go to the Lakewood Beis Din. So who wins? I mean, not using those particular, but they didn't. But let's say one says, let's use the local Beis Din, another says, no, I want to use a more expert Beis Din. We could come up with all sorts of different permutations. I want to use a more expert Beis Din in another town. I want to use the Beis Din HaGadol Shebi Yerushalayim, the Sanhedrin, the biggest Beis Din I can possibly go to. All of these factors in terms of how high, how low, will impact the calculus of where we go. But that will be our second topic. So that middle Gemara is going to be quite integral in terms of understanding the lumdas of that second topic. Then the Gemara comes to the conclusion. Ela Hachi Ka'amar is the last narrow line. I choose one judge, you choose one judge, and together they choose a third judge. Like we said initially, we were forecasting the end of the Gemara, where the two of them each choose a dayon, and together they choose a third. The Gemara asks, what's the point of going through this whole fancy procedure? So Amri b'ma'arava mishmed Rabbi Zeira. Ma'arava is Eretz Yisrael, right? They're in Bavel. They refer to the west as Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they used to say, Mitoch shezeh borer lo dayon echad, v'zeh borer lo dayon echad. Because each one appoints his own judge, and together they appoint the third, Yetze hadin la'amito. You'll end up with a truthful psak based in. It will be an accurate and correct, appropriate, truthful result.
Or we still didn't determine who picks the third one. Is it the litigants or the...
Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, Machlokas. Right, but... But because they're each one is appointing one, and they're both involved, let's say, in the appointment of the third, Yetzei HaDin La'amito. Now the big question is going to be, what does Yetzei HaDin La'amito mean? And that's going to be a key question for us. Let's start, before we look at Rashi actually, let's start with Tosfos. And this is the last Tosfos on the page, Kadesh Yetzei HaDin La'amito. Pirish HaRivan, the Rivan explains, what does this mean? She'afilu ha'chayav yipara beratzon. Even the chayav, even the one who's the loser in the case. What's a better legal term for the... he's not convicted, he's not criminal, right? I don't know. But even the loser in the case will pay up willingly. Be'yomar kushta daini. He'll say, look, they must be telling the truth. It must be an accurate psak din. She'ani ba'atmi birarti ha'echad. Because I myself chose one. Ve'im haya yachol lahapech bizchusi haya mehapech. And if he could have worked something out in my favor, he would have done so. That's the first position. In Tosfos, the Rivan says, Yetzei HaDin La'amito means that they'll listen. They'll abide by the Beis Din's decision because... They'll say, look, you know, if he could have done anything for me, he would have. Clearly, this psak din must be true, and he will abide by the Beis Din's decision. Then Tosfos suggests a second possibility. Lefum rihata mashma, my first glance approach would have been, what it really seems to imply initially, kacha pirush, this is what it means. Shemitosha bir zeshalo v'zeshalo. Let's look in the Bach to get the correct girsa here. Because each one chooses their own, ushnehem hashlishi, and they both choose, that's what the Dalet in the box says, ushnehem hashlishi, and they both choose the third. Yetzei hadin la'amito b'lo avos, sheyehei ha'inyin shakol. There won't be any distortion of the din, because the matter will be even. V'lo yarbu mahapchin l'chova, amahapchin l'schus, v'lo lahapach. There won't be more people advocating for either side. Now I'm just going to point out, this is actually a pun in Tosfos, right? Mahapech means seeking out each one's side. And so it's a, and not the opposite. So it's a, appreciate Tosfos' humor. There's a pun in the Tosfos. But Tosfos are saying now that the matter will be even because you'll have equal advocates on either side. What's the difference between the two perspectives in Tosfos?
I think the second one says it's sort of that the judge that you pick is your advocate rather than just a impartial judge.
And in the first one?
The first one seems like you picked somebody to be impartial, not to advocate for you.
Well, sort of. In the first one, even the Rivan agrees that each one thinks that he's going to be working for him, right?
Yes.
Let's start with the second one. In the second one, Tosfos are saying that the judges actually serve as advocates, in a sense, in some way or another, for
one who chose them.
For the Bali Dinim that chose them. That chose them to almost, I guess, represent them possibly in this case. That they are working for the person who appointed them. That's what it says. Lo yarbu mahapchin l'schos or mahapchin l'chova, right? So you have advocates on either side. What did the Rivan say? The Rivan said, this guy thinks, oh, I appointed him, he must be working in my favor. He thinks that, so therefore he'll abide by the Beis Din's decision. Is the Beis Din actually going to do that?
No.
No, the Beis Din's not going to do that. Now, which one's more intuitive?
The second one.
Second one's more, what do you think? You agree? I would agree, the second one's more intuitive.
Because you appointed him, so he feels obligated.
Oh, you're saying the second approach in Tosfos?
Yes.
Not, you're saying more, you feel that's more intuitive.
Yes.
I would have said the opposite's more intuitive. You think that he's going to advocate
somebody
for him.
Who thinks he's going to
No, but again, he'll think that, but should the Dayanim actually be advocating for the respective Bali Dinim? Right. So again, the second approach in Tosfos is saying that the Bali Dinim are almost expected to do that, or that's at least what it seems.
Yeah.
I would have said the Rivan is much more intuitive. You're going to tell me that the Dayanim are actually going to be taking sides in this case? They're the judges, impartiality, right?
Hopefully.
No, you'd hope. Or at least they should be striving for it. Strange idea in the Rivan, right? Let's take a look at Rashi. Yetze din emes la'amito. You have that Dibur Mazgal? You'll tell me which approach you think Rashi's taking. Yetze din emes la'amito. Did Saisi ba'alei dinin? The ba'alei dinim will listen. Disavar hachayev harei ani be'atzmi birarti ha'echad. Because the obligated party will think I appointed him myself. And if he was able to work on my behalf and advocate for me, he would have. And the judges themselves make it their intent to work for both because they both appointed them. What is Rashi saying?
More like the first one, I think.
You think more like the first one?
That means you think I'm wrong.
I don't know, to be totally honest with you.
Because he sort of says a little bit of both.
Exactly. I don't know what Rashi's saying. Rashi definitely starts sounding like the Rivan. How does he start?
But he's saying both, because he says, I'm appointed, it's true I appointed him, and had he been able to find schus in me, he would have. But he didn't. The loser will say. That had he been able, not that he's right. Advocating for me,
right.
Had
so
he been able.
I think the key line here is that Saisi Ba'alei Dinin, the Ba'alei Dinin will listen. That's exactly like the Rivan. The Rivan said the Chayev will abide by their Psak, and he says, Disavar HaChayev, because he will think that they are doing this. So if I, let's just read this Rashi again. The Saisi Ba'alei Dinin, they'll listen. The Disavar HaChayev, because he will think, Harei Ani Ba'atmi Birarti Ha'echad, Ma'ayachal HaHapik B'Schuzi Ha'ayim HaHapik. He thinks, in his mind, he thinks that if they were able to do it, they would have. If you would have ended the Rashi there, I would have said like you 100%. That is the first one.
Forget Morty. I'm here for the shiur. Bye bye. I'll speak to you later. It's Morty Land.
It's a good man. Dayanim ba'atzman noche daitan lahapich. But then he says this: Dayanim ba'atzman and the dayanim themselves noche daitan lahapich b'schus shnehen. Now here is where ambiguity of language comes in. Shnehen in Hebrew can either mean both or either, and here that difference is very important.
Yeah.
In other words, are they both working for both? Or is each one working for each? I'm sorry, it can mean both or each,
right?
So does it mean both here, that both of the Dayanim are working for both of the Ba'alei Dinim, because after all, they were all appointed in the case? Or does it mean that each one is working for each Ba'al Din, because they were respectively appointed by the two Ba'alei Dinim?
Right.
A little bit ambiguous. I'm not 100% sure what Rashi is saying. But somebody who takes an explicit approach on this is the Rush. Let's take a look at the Rush, and then we're going to consider what exactly this machlokas is, and how it might relate to some of the broader issues in the sugya. How it does relate to some of the broader issues in the sugya. This is the Rush in source 1, Parak Gimel Siman Beis. Mivnei sheyesh chisrei da'as to'in b'divrei Rashi. He starts it by saying there are foolish people who lack intelligence or who lack sophistication, who make a mistake in the words of Rashi. Now you know from the outset that the Rush does not just think this position is wrong, he thinks it's what? It's offensive, okay? Chisrei da'as to'in b'divrei Rashi. It's not that, oh, you know what, the Rambam read it this way and I read it that way. Or, the Rabbeinu Tam read Rashi this way, I think it's read this way. Chisrei da'as to'in b'divrei Rashi, the Rush is not happy about this position. The lomdin mimenu, they learn from him, shehadayon yeshlo lahapich b'schus oso shebirer, that the dayon is supposed to advocate for the person that appointed him. They were obviously learning Rashi that way. The omid bimkomo, and standing in his place, lachapos b'dvarim asher lo kedin, to twist the words that's not kalacha, v'nohagu kama anashim, and many people have this custom, libro lahem ba'alei tachbulos, saying they have these guys who are trying to use the slit, you know, their tricks of the tongue in order to obfuscate the actual halacha and create whatever, manipulate whatever results they want. Kitzer, he wants some sleazy lawyers. They're using sleazy lawyers in order to, in place of these dayanim. And they're doing that nitlin b'divrei Rashi. They're saying that Rashi, this is really what Rashi advocates. Says the Rosh, Bachalila v'chas. Again, chas, he says, chas v'shalom. How do you translate chas?
Chas
v'shalom, right? Whenever you see Rishonim using chas v'shalom, it means, again, that they're not just rejecting the idea, but they're invested in rejection of the idea. Another another prominent place where you see Chalila V'chas in the Rishonim. This is a really interesting one. It's in the sugya of Yehareg V'al Yavor. We know there are three averos for which you give your life, right? Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Damim, and Gilui Arayos, right? Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dafayin Dalet. There's one position in the Gemara that's not so well known that says, this is Rabbi Shmuel's position, that you do not give your life for Avodah Zarah. Okay? There are only two Chamuros according to him, not three. You don't give your life for Avodah Zarah. And, indeed, there is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Samach Zayin, which says, which quotes the position of Rava, and as a general rule, if you know some of the Klalei HaPsak, when Rava takes a position, we almost always follow Rava's position, certainly when he argues with Abaye, but in general, we paskin like Rava. And Rava very strongly implies that Avodah Zarah is not Yehareg V'al Yavar, that one should worship Avodah Zarah rather than losing one's life. That's the implication of the Gemara there, the position of Rava. So much so that Tos Rid says we actually paskin that way. That there are no three chamuros, there are two chamuros. The Piskei Rid says, yeah, Rava's paskining like Rabbi Yishmael. Tosvos say, it may appear as if Rava is paskining like Rabbi Yishmael, that Avodah Zarah is not Yehareg V'al Yavar, but it's wrong. Chalila V'chas, should we say so? Why did Tosvos say Chalila V'chas?
Because during his time, he saw people killed.
Because during Ashkenaz, right? During the Crusades, look how many people, you know, ensured to kill themselves and children and families in order to avoid apostasy to Christianity. So Tosfos say Chalila V'chas, that we paskin like Rava, that Avodah Zarah is not Yehareg V'al Yavar.
So yeah, obviously it says that Rava doesn't really mean that.
Yeah, and they reinterpret Rava. They say that's not really what Rava means, and he means something else. But it's just another fascinating case where you see where Rishon is invested. They say Chalila V'chas. And obviously this is a personal issue for the Rashi. He sees that they're hiring these sleazy people who are trying to... I mean, you wonder who these people were, because they were obviously had to be coming to Chachamim a little bit, right? They had to know what these halachos were. But clearly they're not doing it for the right reasons. They're trying to obscure justice, you know, like a Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Abraham, Lasos Tzedakah U'Mishpat, they're trying to obscure Mishpat. So Chalila V'chas, Lo Diktiku B'dvarav. They didn't pay attention to Rashi. Because of the Savri Hareani Birarti. They think that the person's going to advocate for them. Ki hu sover kach. He thinks she yahapesh b'schuso, yoser mi b'schus ha'acher, umitov zeh tzayas ledinehen. He thinks that each one, that he's being advocated for, and therefore he will listen to the psak. Aval adayan atzmo, but the judge himself, chalila lo limtso svar l'schuso, imlo sheyir lo din gamor. He should never present an argument unless he thinks it is absolutely 100% correct. If he can just trick another person to accept his svara, even if you're not, it might be right, you know what, let me try to convince him because it might be right. You have to be 100% convinced that what you're saying is correct before you try to convince anybody else of your svara. Now, is it possible to throw out an idea and say, what do you think about this? Yeah, I don't think the Rosh would object to that. But if you're trying to convince someone of somebody of your idea, you have to 100% believe in it. Now, here is what the Rosh, but now take a look at what the Rosh himself says. Because it seems awfully similar to this Deya that he's rejecting so adamantly. Aval mitosha zeb biriro. But because the other guy appointed him, mevin dvarav liyishura, he will understand his position to his benefit. He'll kind of be sympathetic. And if this, Baldin, if Ruvain has anything that's working in his favor, he'll bring up that idea to his friends. And the second guy does that for the other Baldin. So nothing will ever be unturned. They'll uncover any possible argument in favor of either side. The third will listen and he'll decide. But what's the difference between what he rejected so adamantly and what he himself advocates? A little strange, right?
He's just saying this is the Messias of things.
I don't think that's what he's saying. He's not saying that's the metzias of things, you know, because he's saying what the dayan should
not.
Do.
Yeah, but he said hopefully not.
So if you're careful in the rush, what he means is as follows. According to the Chizrei Hadas, are saying that each one is a sleazy lawyer trying to obscure the justice in order to argue for each side. He's saying, in essence, what I would call, as opposed to like the sleazy lawyer approach, the investigator's approach. What Beis Din does is delegate certain roles. It says, look, I want you to investigate every possible thing that could work in his favor. I want you to investigate everything that works in his favor. Then we're going to come back to the table, we're going to talk it all out between ourselves, and we're all going to decide who's right. That's what the rush is saying. It's not that each one is advocating and trying to obscure for them. We basically assign roles. In roles, there are, let's think of the legal system here, right? There are lawyers, there are judges, there are detectives too. Okay, so what the rush is saying is effectively, the first two dayanim are made into these pseudo-detectives. Investigate the case. See what you think, hear what he has to say, assess all of his arguments. And Dayan number two, assess all of Shimon's arguments. And then they come back together and they'll decide between them. Now, is it going to be a two-on-one? Not necessarily. They could all come to the conclusion that Shimon's arguments are stronger than Reuven's, or vice versa. But by delegating different roles in terms of exploring specific areas, that's why he says, Nimtza shelo nishar zchus nistar v'nei alam l'shneihem. Nothing's going to be unturned. They're going to uncover any possible idea. That's what the rush is saying. We'll see that this Chisrei Hadas, not this week, but the Chisrei Hadas that the rush rejects may be close to what the Yad Ramah actually says. Maybe. Obviously the Yad Ramah would not say they're supposed to obscure justice.
Who's the Yad Ramah?
The Yad Ramah, Rav Meir Halevi. He's one of the great Rishonim of Sfarad, but not the Catalonian school. Not the Ramban, Rashba, Ritva, the first Sfarad. It's Muslim Spain as opposed to Christian Spain. And intellectually, those are two entirely different schools. So the Spain of the Rif, the Rimigash, the Ramah, and the Rambam is a totally different, in terms of their Talmudic analysis, is totally different from the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, and the Ran. And if anything, the Ramban, the second school, what we call the Catalonian school, because that's Christian Spain, the easy way to remember it is that the Ramban had a famous disputation with Pablo Christiani. So that's Christian Spain. And the Ramban, by contrast, had to flee Spain because the Almohad massacres. So that's how you remember Muslim Spain versus Christian Spain. They actually, intellectually, have more akin to the Balei HaTosos of France. What effectively happens is you have Rashi, you have Rabbeinu Tam. For a while, Talmudic epicenter of the world is France. Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, the Ri, the Rashmishans, you know, all these Balei HaTosos, French Balei HaTosos are working around. But then, as you move into the 13th century, there's kind of a shift in terms of the axis of centrality. Once the Ramban comes along in Spain, he really picks up the work of the Balei HaTosos and kind of takes it to the next level in certain ways. That's, you know, we have a history of halacha class one time, but that's effectively what happens. The Ramban is from Islamic Spain. Now, what I want to close with is the following question. We have three positions now. One, these Chisrei Hadas, the sleazy lawyer approach. On the opposite extreme, the Dayanim are regular Dayanim. It's just a trick to make the Ba'alei Dinim comply. Third option is that they're investigators. What's Pshat? What is this hinge on? What is this really driving at? Come on. You're loved in now.
Yeah, oh yeah. You can't do it in half an hour.
So I think one of the central questions is as follows. In general, a lot of times, right, there's a mitzvah of minui dayan, minui batetin, right? You have to appoint batetin, l'chol prach l'prach, l'plach l'plach, l'chol ir ve'ir. Right, in Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz, there are different standards, but there's a clear hierarchy of Batei Din, and those are established Batei Din. That's a Beis Din that you come to. Here we have this, what we'll call an ad hoc Beis Din, right? You appoint one, I appoint one, together we appoint a third, or they appoint a third. The question is going to be as follows. Is this method of appointing a Beis Din merely a convenient method for appointing a Beis Din? And once they are appointed, they function as every regular Beis Din does. They are a full Beis Din to the fullest sense, just like the Beis Din of City X or City Y or Province X or Shevet Y. It's a convenient method of appointing an ad hoc based in. But it's all Zavla is, all Zebor Lo Echad is a method of appointing or no? Is Zavla, this ad hoc mechanism, reflective of the fact, reflective of a different character of based in? This based in is not the same as every other based in once they're appointed. It's different somehow. It's a less formal based in. It's less structured. Mashal Amad Devar Domeh. Every time you come into based in, there's a concept called Pshara. What is Pshara? It's frequently translated as compromise. That's not really the technical definition of Pshara. Pshara means that the judges are not bound by the strict letter of Choshen Mishpah. It means they're allowed to judge based on their own, what they think is right. It doesn't necessarily mean compromise means I gain something, you gain something, and we each sacrifice something. Famous example is a case that was brought to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. There was a wealthy woman who had a woman who worked for her in the house. She had this maid or housekeeper, whatever the case may be. She was tidying her house, and this lower class maid had a very fancy piece of jewelry which she actually lent to her employer, and the employer lost it. So they took the case to Rav Chaim, and Rav Chaim said, do you want to go al pi choshen mishpat, or do you want to do a pshara? Do you want to do a... They said pshara. Chaim said, so pay her back for the thing you lost. That's a pshara? Why did Rav Chaim ask that? So there's a halacha that's mentioned in the Torah, in Parshat Mishpatim, called be'alav ima. That if I lend you something, and I'm working for you while I lend it to you, then if anything happens to it, you're pater. Okay? Because the assumption is, if I'm there to oversee what's happening, I'm taking a certain degree of responsibility. So if I lend you my ox, and I'll tell you, oh, I'm going to work with the ox, I'm going to be the one who does the harvesting, then I'm the one who takes responsibility for it, and if the ox dies, it's my problem, not yours. In this case, this woman was working for her. She was a housekeeper, and she lent her an object. So al pi choshen mishpat, the woman would have been pater entirely. Now, if Chaim saw, you have a wealthy woman who borrowed something from a poor woman, and she lost it. Right? So you're going to say, she's pater, ve'alav imah. If Chaim said, do you want to do a pshara? They said yes. It's like, okay, so pay her back for the object that you lost. So just a good demonstration of how pshara doesn't mean compromise. He wasn't saying, so pay half. He said, pay the whole thing. Pshara means that we're not working within the strict letter of Choshen Mishpat. We're working based on the da'as ha-dayanim, what they perceive to be Mishpat, and, right? Fine. But we do have this concept of pshara. Pshara means that there are certain cases where Beis Din is acting, not within the strict framework of Choshen Mishpat, but outside of it. Somewhat outside of it. Is a Beis Din of Zavla more akin to a pshara? It's kind of like, okay, it's arbitration. Let's use the word arbitration, because that's... Is it a form of arbitration? Or no, it's not arbitration. It's a method of appointing Dayanim, but once they are appointed, they're a full Beis Din in every single sense. That's going to be one of the key questions about Zebor. Now, according to, let's say, the Rivan, What is Beis Din Shel Zavla? It's a method of appointing a Beis Din. But once they are a Beis Din, they're a Beis Din entirely. They're a Beis Din across the board. You can't start playing around and saying, this one's going to do this one's going to do that. Like, they are a Beis Din. They have to function like a Beis Din. They have to maintain the impartiality, the neutrality of a Beis Din. Like, you can't start playing games. According to the Chisri Adas, what is Beis Din Shel Zavla? It's not really a Beis Din at all. I'm appointing an advocate, you're appointing an advocate, they're each advocating for us respectively, and the third guy's going to come to a decision. According to the Rush, not really so clear. It can't be a little of each, it's one or the other, but I'm not. Yes. Just from this single position, not really so clear. Would you say, let's say you had a regular Beis Din, can they delegate roles like that? Can they say to one person, you investigate his side, you investigate his side, and then we'll reconvene? I don't know. So, the Rush is not really so clear. But that's going to be a very central question in this sugya. Now, we're not going to have time to go through everything. I mentioned that we have the question of the Mishnah and the question of Rashi's Havamina, which I obviously think relate to this broader issue. But let's just talk about it for 1 second. I know we're already over time, but we have this machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to who appoints the third Dayan, the Balei Dinim or the Dayanim themselves. So what do we think about that? If this is arbitration, right? And what is the authority of this based in?
Not too much.
Not too much. What does it rest on? It rests on the acceptance of the Balei Dinim. Rabbi Meir says the Balei Dinim are going to be the ones who chews the third dayan? What do the Chachamim say? Chachamim say, no, you've done your part. We needed you to get the process started. We need it so that you'll listen to the dayanim in the end of the day. But we want to get the Balei Dinim out of the process as fast as we can. Second machlokas. Do I have veto power over the other person's dayan? If this is arbitration, then yeah, I should have veto. I can decide who's going to arbitrate my case. I have veto power over your dayan. If this is a real beis din, once I've appointed a dayan, you need to prove that there's a kara of apostle. So it's quite conceivable that this machlokas and these two machlokas in the Mishnah gufa hinge upon our issue. According to Rabbi Meir, this is a form of arbitration. Therefore, we're going to invest as much power in the Balei Dinim as we can, as you pointed out initially. According to the Chachamim, this is not an arbitration. This is a beis din. You're going to tell me, just start getting rid of other people? We have standards in beis din. You can't do that. What about Rashi? Why would you have a hava minhag to think that you need nine? It's true. Dinei mamonos b'shlosha. If you're dealing with a beis din, you have three dayanim.
This is not.
But if it's an arbitration case, if you learn Rashi the way the Chisrei Hadas are learning Rashi, ironically, but even if you learn it like the Rush, it's conceivable that what? Then no. Okay, it's true. Dinei mamonos b'shlosha. A real beis din shel dinei mamonos has three. But this is not necessarily dinei mamonos. Perhaps the original havamin in the Gemara hinged on the notion that this is a kind of arbitration. And if it's arbitration, you could possibly have more. So we're going to flesh out both of those ideas. We're going to see how the Ramban relates to that first Havamin and Rashi, an important Ramban on the Torah. Icha esol levadi tor chachem masa achem rivchem, right? The famous pasuk that we always read before Tisha B'Av in the tune of Megillas Eicha. You're never going to be able to look at the pasuk the same way after you see the Ramban and learn the sugya of Zeborer. That's a halachic point that he makes on the pasuk. And we'll see how this might play out in the Machlokas in the Mishnah, or how you could possibly say the opposite. The exact opposite of what I'm saying now. Okay?
One point, though.
Yeah.
No matter how you choose and how you deal, etc., isn't that the third judge, whatever you want to call him, isn't he the key to the whole factor? He's the controller.
Yeah.
So what do you care if it's an arbitration, it's a regular judge, I appoint, you appoint? It's the third person. Even if you and I do the appointing, and we agree, he's the one that's the main character. He's not going to work for you. He's not going to work for me.
Well, what we're saying, Nathan, is that if it's not arbitration, okay, if it's a real beis din, then none of them are going to work for any of the parties. That's the Rivan's position. They're all going to maintain their neutrality. The Balei Dinim think that they're going to work on their behalf, but their goal is to maintain absolute neutrality, all three of them.
But even arbitration, that third person is not working for either one of us.
That's true. But what I'm saying is that you're saying everything hinges on the third person.
Right.
I'm saying that if you hold like the Rivan, everything hinges on all three of them. If you hold like the Rivan, the third one doesn't have any better status than the first two. They're all neutral. They're all going to be impartial. If you say it's arbitration, then you're 100% right. Everything relies on that third person.
No, but even if you appoint them according to halacha, I mean, it's not arbitration. It's a regular beis din. If two of them are appointed by the Baal Batin, it's obvious that they're going to twist and turn things around if they can according to halacha.
No, again, there's a difference between what you're saying, like the Rush saying, investigating. According to some, again, that we always get into the human nature question, right? But at least the halacha's goal for them is for them to, their job description, their job portfolio is to maintain their neutrality. Despite the fact that you were appointed by him and you were appointed by him, maintain your neutrality. And as we said, it's quite conceivable that all three of them will agree that Reuven was right, or all three of them will agree that Shimon was right. So that's why this question is critical. In other words, your point itself hinges on how we view Beis Din Shel Zavla. If it's arbitration, then you're 100% right. Everything comes down to guy number three. But if it's a real beis din, then all three of them should be involved in the process. And as you'll see, there will be a whole host of other nafkaminas, a whole host of other issues that might potentially emerge from this question that we'll discuss. Elohim lo sekalel. Don't curse a judge. Does that apply to a judge of Zavla? It's machlokas in the poskim. What is that contingent on?
Is it a real...
Can you suffice with only two? As opposed to having a full three. Can you add more? If you want more. At what point can you be chozer? We'll see a whole host of different issues that all depend on the central hakir that we're raising now. Okay?
Now you're going back.